Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to our podcast, The Greek Current, for your daily roundup, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HALC staff. Kelly Bjorklund, a writer for Foreign Policy magazine, joins The Greek Current to discuss her latest piece in foreign policy on the trial against Turkey's HALC Bank for helping Iran evade U.S. sanctions. Kelly Bjorklund interviewed both former National Security Advisor John Bolton and former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in an effort to understand the reasons behind President Trump's repeated attempts to shield HALC Bank and Turkey's President Erdogan from paying any penalty. We also look at her in-depth interview with former Secretary of State Tillerson on his former boss, the state of the world, and the challenges facing the Biden administration. Kelly, welcome to The Greek Current. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
The Trump White House has repeatedly and inexplicably tried to shield Turkish President Erdogan and Turkey's HALC Bank from paying any penalties for its sanctions-busting scheme with Iran. Now, you spoke to former National Security Advisor John Bolton about this for your piece in Foreign Policy magazine. How did he explain President Trump's decision-making when it came to the HALC Bank case in particular?
Well, that was certainly one of the questions that I had. And as you say, and as we put in the headline of the story, that it is inexplicable, the president's actions on face. And that was one of the things that I asked about, because I don't think anyone has a satisfactory answer. And as I wrote about in the story, Ambassador Bolton believed that Trump was just taken with how authoritarian leaders such as Xi or Putin or Erdogan could do things in their respective countries and just be able to kind of get away with it and not have to account for it or follow procedures that we in free and civil societies with rule of law have in place. And in this example with HALC Bank, it's the Justice Department and the rule of law and law enforcement. So his view, as he told it to me and as I put in the story, was that Trump was doing it as a favor to Erdogan. And when I asked him how he knew that and came to that view, Ambassador Bolton said it was because he heard Trump say to Erdogan, quote unquote, "I'm just doing it for you personally."
You also spoke to former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson about this case, and Tillerson told you he was not really sure that Trump understood the magnitude of the HALC Bank case and that he tried to explain the gravity to the president with no success. Instead, he mentions that Giuliani and Mukasey pressured him to intervene to drop the case. What role did these two individuals play when it came to the White House position on this issue?
Well, both Secretary Tillerson and Ambassador Bolton said that they explained the case of HALC Bank in their various iterations to the president on multiple occasions, and that they both did not think that the president understood the underlying charges or the seriousness of the case, despite their attempts to explain it. And what I need to point out here is that what we're talking about is two different lawsuits. The first is the case against Reza Zarrab and Hakan Atilla, the deputy manager of the bank, and others, which went to trial at the end of 2017. And then the second lawsuit, which is the further investigation of HALC Bank as its own entity, and which was charged in October of 2019. So Secretary Tillerson told me that he considered Giuliani and Mukasey's pressure on the case as illegal interference in an ongoing investigation, and that he told the lawyers in 2017 and the president at this meeting that it was improper. And after he did this in the meeting, both of the lawyers were very upset because they wanted the charges against Reza Zarrab and Hakan Atilla to go away. And they presented different options to make that happen to the president and to the Secretary of State. And another thing is that when you asked me about what role these individuals play in terms of the White House position, it's really an important question. And I don't think that there is an adequate answer, up until this date. These are folks who went to Turkey at the very beginning of the president's term. They went to Turkey in 2017 to try to negotiate Reza Zarrab's release. And then they're sitting in the White House trying to make that case to the president. When they went to Turkey, they went as Reza Zarrab's lawyer. But when they're sitting in the Oval Office, what is Giuliani's role there? And I think it's incredibly messy, as it's been documented. He's worked for several lobbying firms, including those that represent foreign governments, and he's not registered as a foreign agent at the same time. He's also an advisor to the president. He does media appearances. He became his personal lawyer. And it's impossible to understand at any given time what is his role. So in this meeting, what was his role, and on whose behalf is he working? when he's sitting there in the Oval Office with the Secretary of State.
Tillerson also told you that one challenge he faced early on in the administration was that there were a number of people who had access to the president's ear who were telling him things, most of which Tillerson said were untrue. And then, quote, he began to listen to those voices and form a view that had no basis in fact, end quote, and ran counter to what he says were U.S. national security interests. Was this the case with advisors like Giuliani and Mukasey over the Zarab and Halk Bank trials?
What Tillerson told me about the case of Halk Bank was that he definitely believed that there was any U.S. national security interest at all in having the case go away, as well as it being illegal interference in an ongoing investigation. And I cannot speak for him regarding this particular conversation if he felt that this was an example of someone having the president's ear and not having the correct information. But I can say that as I talked to him about in our interview and our conversation was that it was extremely frustrating for him to be a cabinet member and have access to U.S. security intel, to be the top diplomat for the country, and, you know, to have the president not really take those views seriously and to instead give so much credence to what random people who would call him or friends of the president's would say to him. And as he said in our conversation, that these conversations often didn't have any basis in fact. And these were the people who had the president's ear.
You and Tillerson also spoke in depth about his work on U.S.-Turkey relations. What insight did Tillerson have into why Trump was so dead set on accommodating Turkey's Erdogan, not just on Halk Bank, but on other issues as well, such as the S-400s and its role in NATO?
I mean, that is the question, right? I mean, that question that I had, that many people have, that Turkey experts I spoke to have. And as a result of these interviews, I've learned that the president's closest advisors and cabinet members also have. Why would he want to do a solid for Erdogan? Why did he want to cozy up to him? And from the perspective of Secretary Tillerson, his point of view was that there was no strategic national security objective to accommodate him on Halk Bank. And from Ambassador Bolton's perspective as well, they both said, as I wrote in the story, that the deterrence against future sanctions violators was in U.S. interest. And not only that, as Tillerson said himself, it's both the president and the fact that if you're not willing to prosecute these guys for the most egregious violations under sanctions laws, then what will you do in the future with anybody? And I think that that is a very valid question, and the ramifications of it are significant. He also, of course, understands Tillerson, spoke at length about the relationship with Turkey being an important ally in a strategic part of the world and a NATO ally, and it's an important relationship. But no one has been able to provide an explanation for the president's behavior with Erdogan regarding Halk Bank or vetoing the National Defense Bill, which has sanctions in place for the purchase of the S-400s, or any of the things that you've mentioned, because they're contrary to U.S. stated interests. And Secretary Tillerson, as I put in the foreign policy piece, said that he met with Erdogan and Foreign Minister Çavuşoğlu, including in closed-door sessions, and warned them about how the purchase of the S-400s would be seen as a provocative move.
Tillerson also said he was concerned about the mess that Trump was leaving behind when it comes to America's place in the world. What key challenges did he believe that the Biden administration will have to tackle right off the bat in order to right the ship?
As he says in our conversation, obviously there's multiple challenges facing the world and the incoming president and his administration. But for him, he said that China was the biggest worry, and he feared that the U.S. would come to military conflict with China within the decade. He's also concerned about Russia and Russian aggression, particularly in terms of how they were playing Turkey against the West and how this may influence the NATO alliance. And obviously there's many people, including Secretary Tillerson, who are concerned about the Middle East and containing Iran. So it's a full plate, I think. I would also add that from a diplomacy point of view, I think that a lot of damage has been done to U.S. allies. And that's something that we spoke about in terms of how the president disparaged our friends abroad. And as you read in the interview, Secretary Tillerson was very baffled as to why the president would behave that way against our longstanding democratic partners, especially in Europe and in the case with our closest neighbors, Canada. So myself personally, as a result of this conversation and having watched this over the last 4 years, I think that rebuilding is important.
I want to bring us home with the last question on Halk Bank. The trial of Halk Bank is moving forward this year with the U.S. District Court in New York set to start the trial on March 1st. What should we expect in this trial, and what's at stake for Turkey, its economy, and President Erdogan?
As you know, in the American system of justice, parties are presumed innocent until proven guilty. So everything in this case are allegations. But as it relates to the Halk Bank case, the bank's deputy manager has already been convicted for the scheme that's related to this upcoming case, and he's already served a prison sentence. Incidentally, he was rewarded by Erdogan after he was released and named the head of the Istanbul Stock Exchange. But all of that being said, I believe that the Halk Bank case is very big. And as I wrote about, Erdogan is named in the indictment for participating and facilitating the scheme. And this is a public lender in Turkey financed by the Turkish government and majority owned by the Turkish government. And he is a sitting head of state implicated in a sanctions violation scheme for Iran. So it's incredibly serious. And it's also the largest sanctions evasions case in U.S. history. And every Turkey expert I spoke to when researching this story said that there's a lot at stake for Erdogan and Turkey, and he has a lot to lose in terms of his credibility, his legitimacy, both domestically and internationally. Because, as you know, this case was already tried. It was part of a probe in Turkey domestically previously. And Erdogan made the case to the Turkish people and to the international community that it was politically motivated. So what happens at a trial in the U.S. can have significant ramifications for him domestically and abroad. Aside from the very obvious embarrassment of the bribes, the implications start with how he could have potentially lied to the Turkish people. So it's a corruption case. It's also a national security scandal for Turkey, in that Zarab and Iran had Turkish ministers allegedly on their payroll, and ministers at the highest level were involved. And as you say, there's also potentially implications for the economy. And I think that will depend upon the outcome of the trial, and we'll have to wait and see.
Kelly, thanks for joining us today on The Greek Current. It was great having you with us.
Thank you very much.
In other news, in the run-up to the resumption of exploratory contacts on January 25th, Turkey is seeking to set the agenda, adding issues it wants to negotiate despite Greece's insistence that the sole topic for discussion is a delimitation of maritime zones between the two countries. According to Turkish media, Ankara wants to discuss issues ranging from the demilitarization of Greek islands to search and rescue areas. Asked about the demilitarization of Greek islands, Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis said on Tuesday that no Greek government has ever discussed them in the past and that it will not discuss them now. Meanwhile, the House of Representatives voted on Wednesday to impeach President Trump for a second time in a historic bipartisan condemnation of an outgoing president whose words fueled a deadly insurrection at the Capitol. 10 Republicans joined all Democrats in a 232-197 vote supporting a single impeachment count, incitement of insurrection. The process now moves to the Senate, where an impeachment trial will not begin before President-elect Biden is sworn in on January 20th. NPR reported that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's office said on Wednesday that the chamber, which is currently held by Republicans, will not convene again until the transfer of power is complete. That wraps up today's Daily Roundup. Thanks for tuning in.